Get ready to listen, learn, and earn CE hours. This podcast features content from an accredited CE activity provided by Calibri Healthcare. Visit elitelearning.com/podcasts for accreditation and disclosure statements and instructions on how you may be able to earn CE credits.
Hello, and thank you for taking the time to join us. I am Leanna McGuire, your host for this podcast by Calibri Healthcare. Today, we will be discussing challenging patient interactions. We all know that conversations between people in general can have understandings and misunderstandings. Conversations can lead to peace or discord, a team approach or mistrust, understanding or confusion. In healthcare, many conversations take place in the presence of a health concern, scare, or crisis. This adds an additional layer of stress or the potential for a challenging or difficult time with communication. Today, we want to help healthcare professionals to thoughtfully consider the challenges that are part of the different types of patient interactions. Healthcare professionals often find certain patient interactions particularly stressful, anxiety-provoking, or upsetting. We want to discuss how to recognize why certain interactions are stressful and help healthcare professionals break down their feelings and consider how to approach such interactions for the best possible outcomes. Our subject matter expert today is Dr. Heidi Mowad. Dr. Mowad is a neurologist and medical writer who has been writing educational materials for healthcare professionals and the public for over 10 years. She also speaks at professional conferences and works with undergraduate and medical students at Case Western Reserve University. Welcome, Dr. Mowad.
Thank you so much for having me, Leanna. It's nice to be here.
Yes, we're really pleased to have you. So let's get started. Now, the majority of us as nurses and physicians are familiar with challenging patient interactions. What would you like to cover today that will prove helpful to our listeners?
Well, I think the main thing is that when I started reading and writing and learning about this, I was really so surprised that there's so much research on this subject. And so I think the real key for healthcare professionals to keep in mind is that this is so common and it's really overwhelming for many people. And that's, you know, proven by the fact that there is so much research out there and so much written and so much concern about the subject. So a really important thing for any healthcare professional to keep in mind is that you are not alone and you are not the only one who has found these things to be challenging. And you're definitely not the only one who's looking for solutions. Solutions are not obvious to anyone. So trying to find a way to deal with these things really is a very important step, but it you're not alone in that.
So define challenging in this context.
Well, challenging, one of the things I've learned, there are so many different definitions and so many different types of challenges. So some of them come from patient stress. Some of them come from a patient sort of reaction towards a healthcare provider. And a lot of them come from our own inability to really immediately know what is the right answer and our own inability to be honest in saying everything is going to work out perfectly. So a lot of times we can't say that. And that can be challenging for any healthcare provider because you always want to tell your patients everything is going to be perfect. We have 100% guaranteed solution. And when you can't do that, it's hard for the healthcare provider, not just for the patient.
Correct. Okay, good. Well, we're going to dig into this a little bit deeper. But first, I'd like you to tell us some information about why this topic matters to you personally and how your experiences have prepared you to speak to us today about these challenging interactions.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a neurologist. I worked as a clinical neurologist for several years, and then I started to pivot to different areas of medicine. And I worked in utilization review for 7 years. And then I started writing. And as I started writing for the public, one of the real benefits that I had was that I was able to look up and see what are people asking about. And that gave me a really interesting insight into what patients are concerned about, what they're scared about, what they want the answers to. And so when you see what people Google on their computer, you see what they're really stressed out about when they go home after seeing the doctor, or you see what families are stressed out about. And it just kind of, I think it really built a lot of empathy. But at the same time, I've been a clinical neurologist. So I've been on the side of trying to keep my own cool and trying to be reassuring. And in writing, of course, I have this advantage, which is that I have plenty of time to be reassuring. I don't have to respond on the spot. So I'll admit right there that that is much easier than having to respond to someone in real time when they're very stressed out. But so that's why it's been so interesting to me.
So let's dig in a little bit about the different kinds of encounters, starting with hostile patients. There's probably a myriad of reasons why a patient would become hostile, but let's talk about those interactions specifically.
Sure. So as you said, yes, there are so many different reasons. And, the main one is that they're upset. So they're upset about what is happening to them. They're upset potentially because they don't have the answer that they want. And, as healthcare providers, we also all wish we could give patients the answers that they want, which is really, you are going to be better. And I know this for sure. But most of the time, we are unable to provide that answer. So patients can just be going through those stages of grief that we often read about. And, where are you as the healthcare provider in their stage of grief? And so they can often identify that provider, whether it's a nurse or a physical therapist or a physician or, anybody on the whole team, as being maybe the cause of that grief, or they can really associate that healthcare provider with sort of getting blocked in those stages of grief, because everybody has to go through them. So it would be very unusual for someone to hear something that they don't want to hear, that they have an illness, or maybe the illness, we don't know what it is, or we don't for sure know what the treatment is, or the treatment's going to be hard or painful or take a long time. And the person who's relaying that information or who is part of that negativity, it's easy to blame them. And as human beings, all of us can imagine, we're never happy with the person who tells us something we don't want to hear.
Right. Yes. Good point. And on the unfairness of the disease or the outcomes can definitely, I hear what you're saying, that can raise that. They can be angry and it can raise to hostility. Now, what about non-compliance? Sometimes I think, patients will react with non-compliance, which can be super frustrating for both sides, the health professional and the patient. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, so non-compliance is really, really common. When you start to look at studies about compliance and non-compliance, the numbers are kind of staggering, a lot more than what most healthcare providers would imagine when they're sending their patient home with some instructions. You would never imagine. I mean, some studies will say things like 40%, 60% are non-compliant. And you definitely don't expect that when you're explaining what people need to do. But compliance can be very difficult for so many reasons. One is that people often are in disbelief that the intervention is going to work, especially if they're asked to do something like give themselves an injection or take a medication every day or multiple times a day. It can be kind of exhausting and it can really interfere with your day-to-day life. So it can just be hard to make yourself do it. And then sometimes people aren't really sure that the medication or any kind of treatment is going to help. So if the condition is something that people are being told that they have, but the symptoms are not that terrible, then it's sort of, there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle that aren't super obvious. Someone may have a mild symptom or a mild discomfort and they're told, your imaging tests tell us this big deal of a thing and you have to take this medication three times a day. And so it kind of seems like, well, the symptom wasn't really that bad. And it's hard to wrap your head around potential complications in 3 years down the road. And I'm going to prevent that complication by taking something every day. So maybe I don't have to take it every day. Maybe I can skip once in a while, you know. So that's one of the reasons. It's just kind of that hard to dig sink your teeth into really the pros and cons of taking the medication. Another thing, of course, is side effects. So side effects are unpleasant for anyone. And so trying to stretch that out maybe or avoid the side effect is another reason. And then another one is just kind of the idea that maybe the cost is a lot. So trying to even stretch out a prescription before you have to go and get the next one. And this can be an issue for cost with copays. It can be an issue if it's kind of inconvenient to get the medication, if you have to jump through a bunch of hurdles, like calling a few different places to get a renewal or a refill, then that can also make you want to hold off a little bit until you wait a little bit longer than usual or than what's recommended.
Right. Do you think that sometimes compliance is related, or non-compliance, I should say, is related to some level of wanting to have control for these patients?
It might be. It might be. I mean, for a lot of people, you know, there's sort of this idea that the instructions that are given by healthcare provider are a little bit cookie cutter, and they tell everyone to do this, but maybe I'm a little bit different. And so I'm not going to do it exactly that way because I know myself better than my doctor or nurse practitioner or therapist or whoever is giving this information. And so that can be part of it too.
Great. Okay. Now, and we are eventually, we'll talk about some ways of coping with these interactions, but covering the different types, I think, is important before we get into that. But can we also discuss the violence or burnout? Because sometimes it goes to a level that is, beyond. I think a lot of nurses, sadly, have experienced that, or health professionals, healthcare professionals.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is a real area of stress for healthcare providers. And I do think with some of the research that's been done, it can be directed towards anyone really in the healthcare system, but it does tend to be a little bit more prevalent towards nurses, probably because of the more close and prolonged contact. And also because nurses, there's still more females in the nursing profession than males, and they tend to be physically smaller, so a little bit less intimidating there. And so that can be, you know, overwhelming. I mean, it's not really possible for a nurse to always be accompanied by someone else. You just would never get your work done if you always had to work in teams or in pairs, or, you can't have a bodyguard with you all the time. So it's scary. And from what I understand, it's also unexpected. So it's not necessarily, and this is terrible, mm-hmm. really, is it's not necessarily the patient that you think is going to lash out. Because in that situation, a nurse may actually then take the time to ask for someone else to be in the room. And, you know, maybe that's preventative, but a lot of times it's described as being unexpected. So people didn't prepare. And so from what I understand, I don't think it's always possible to predict or to prepare for that. And it's terrifying. If that happens to someone, what do? Do they go back to work the next day? I think a lot of nurses might want to, just to kind of forget about it and remind themselves that most of the time this doesn't happen, but it can be really difficult. That patient may still be an inpatient. And physically, it can be difficult. If someone is in pain or has a bruise or something, it's very difficult. So it's overwhelming, and it really makes people wonder, is this job worth it? Do I really want to expose myself to this? Especially when you think about why people become nurses in the first place. They do it to help people, but not really to risk their lives in order to help people. So it's just absolutely horrible when it happens. And I don't know that there's, I think the support that has to be given for a nurse or any healthcare professional who's been hurt by violence has to be just a huge amount of support, physically and emotionally and practically too, in terms of protection.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I think there probably are, I'll have you speak to this, some ways to prepare ourselves for potential violence. I can say from a personal perspective, I've been a nurse for many years, that I stopped wearing my stethoscope around my neck. Thankfully, I had someone with me, but someone took advantage of that position to, you know, try and strangle me with it, basically. And it was very overwhelming. So stethoscope in the pocket is my advice. But are there other ways to potentially prepare ourselves for these, like training, or what would be some ways for us to just in case?
Well, and I don't necessarily think I have all the answers, but in what I've read about this, some things are really kind of potentially protective are having a very clear team approach. So showing that everyone gets along, so that anybody who does not like a nurse will understand that everybody else on that team has her back or his back, you know? So that's one thing. Not really showing hostility or contradicting each other or talking in a way that sets up healthcare providers against each other. So that's kind of a big overarching thing. And it may not work for everyone. It may not work for every patient, but it can work for some. If some people feel that, even subconsciously, that division among the team could potentially be an opportunity to attack someone either physically or verbally or accuse them in that way. So that's one thing, is to have good relations with the whole team as a policy. Okay. And another thing is, you know, potentially doors open with patients. So especially patients who may be a little bit larger than the healthcare provider, having doors open or having certain therapy sessions with a window between provider and other providers, or you know, curtains instead of complete doors. Now, I know that doesn't work for everything and everybody, but it can help a little bit. Potentially even just having students around, and you know, a lot of times it's not always possible to do what I'm going to suggest, but a lot of times there's, you know, five students with one provider. And in many situations, that's not necessary. And really seeing that one-on-one care that a nurse provides to patients can be more beneficial than this kind of big team of lectures. And it doesn't always have to be the same way, but it's just one of those things that physicians in training, therapists in training, everybody can get this benefit by seeing what happens, you know, one-on-one and observing that. So that can help protect people as well. But I also think another thing is go with your gut. So even, you know, if you're wrong, it's totally fine. But if something is even slightly concerning to you, maybe ask for help, ask for someone else to come in the room. And if you're wrong, that's great. It doesn't matter. You'll probably never know. But if there was any danger there, it could potentially be preventative.
I'm really glad that you mentioned the cohesiveness among the team and, you know, displaying that in front of the patients and working together. It really speaks to interprofessional or team approaches when it comes to that. But there's also the physician-nurse relationship and all the pieces that go together to help as we work together to get the best outcomes. Do you have any examples of interprofessional scenarios between, say, physician and nurses and the communication and how that's important in situations like this?
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing is clear communication and consistent communication. If patience is important too. And so I've been in this situation as sort of when I was a junior person, where people would maybe say part of what they intended to say and expect you to read their minds with the rest. And if you don't fill in the blank correctly, because potentially there's more than one way to fill in what they didn't say, then you're going to make a mistake. So asking for clarification can be met with impatience or sort of like, why are you asking me over and over again? But it's like, you know, details really do matter. And so expecting people to read your mind is not usually a good idea. And it's really important to be clear on the details. So I think patience is one, not being afraid to ask for clarification. And those really do go hand in hand. If someone's constantly annoyed with you because you ask for clarification, you're less likely to ask for clarification. And then you're going to guess, and your guess might be right, your guess might be wrong. So communication, patience, asking for clarification if you need it. I think also not making, unfortunately, physicians and all healthcare providers, nurses and everybody often make kind of sarcastic remarks about things, sometimes in front of the patient, and that can really set up other members of the team for, you know, just hostility from patients. And it can even set up the whole healthcare system for hostility. So we've all unfortunately heard this where someone's looking at a chart and says, I can't believe they did this, or I can't believe they didn't do this. And, you know, you weren't there. You don't know what the circumstances were. Hindsight is always 20/20. That's just so obvious that looking back, of course, things should have been done differently many times, but you don't know that until the outcome happens. And then you see where potentially gaps were made. So not making those kind of snarky sort of remarks, because it does make it challenging then for everybody else who's trying to do a good job.
Right, right. Well, this is, I mean, all of this information is so important. And I'm curious about statistics. Are there specific types of patients who are more prone to have these reactions or challenging interactions?
Well, so this has been hard for me to nail down, to be honest with you. So there are some type of patients who have, you know, certain personality disorders, like antisocial kind of personality, where there is just an overall tendency to do things that are harmful to others. But in addition to that, there are people who are otherwise trying to live a healthy and happy and peaceful life who might become overwhelmed and react out of character and unexpectedly to their own healthcare crisis or the healthcare crisis of a family member. So, you know, certainly people who are otherwise, you know, having violent or hostile tendencies will probably have that across the board in many aspects of their life. And others can as well, unexpectedly.
Right. And we're talking specifically in this conversation about those people who are aware of what they're doing and what's going on. I mean, the confused patient is a completely other, a different category in itself, in that they're not aware of what they're doing. And I think all of us listeners, all of our listeners and ourselves are well aware of those situations. And it is kind of a sad and scary fact that all of us have experienced or witnessed some kind of, you know, difficult interaction with patients, even to the point of seeing those that do get violent. So it is something that happens on a fairly frequent basis. And as you said, it can be heartbreaking for the caregiver. So I'm really glad that we're having this conversation. I think it's really important that that we go down this road and discuss these interactions. So people who suffer from depression can be prone to these reactions too. Is that correct?
Well, you know, I haven't seen that specifically prone to kind of violent outbursts necessarily, but maybe more, you know, hostility or blaming. But I don't know that people who have been diagnosed with depression are more likely to be violent. But I actually do want to go back to something you said, which is,
please,
that you mentioned that we've seen this. So one thing I also wanted to mention is that for sure the person who is personally impacted by violence has a huge trauma to deal with. But other people who maybe were on the same shift or who frequently work with that person are also very likely to be traumatized in emotional mm-hmm. ways. So maybe not as much as the person who was physically attacked, but it really does affect everyone. And then it can often cause people to sort of pull back, all of them. Everybody can pull back in the aftermath of a violent attack and really just hesitate to spend too much time with anybody who they perceive as potentially being violent. So it does have consequences that really are much more widespread than just one individual who was attacked, even though, of course, that person has the biggest emotional fallout to deal with.
Sure, absolutely. It's like a secondary post-traumatic stress, correct?
Right.
If you've witnessed it, yeah.
Absolutely.
No, that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up as well. So is there anything else that you'd like to add about these particular challenging interactions? I know that we'll get into kind of looking at different aspects of it when we do our second episode in this series, which will be super interesting as well, and you'll be returning for that. Anything that you'd like to add on these interactions before we close out the first episode?
Well, I think just, you know, one thing about it that I do want to add is that, you know, a lot of times we all have really extreme reactions of trying to avoid another event. And sometimes we don't understand why. So I think just self-awareness about, you know, why something affected you, maybe not being so hard on yourself if you are very traumatized and accepting the fact that it really bothered you, if you or someone else was harmed in some way, is a really important thing to be aware of.
Thank you, Dr. Moad, for your expertise during this first episode in our series on challenging patient interactions, conversations that matter. So far, we've discussed why challenging patient interactions occur and the different types we may encounter. In our second episode, also, like I said, featuring Dr. Moad, we'll dig further into this complex dynamic, covering how to potentially avoid these scenarios, whose fault they may be, if anyone's, problems that occur as a result, our own feelings toward these interactions, and possible solutions. It'll be another informative half hour, and we look forward to seeing you there. This is Leanna McGuire for Elite Learning by Calibri Healthcare.
This podcast featured content from an accredited CE activity provided by Calibri Healthcare. Visit elitelearning.com/podcasts for accreditation and disclosure statements and instructions on how you may be able to earn CE credits. Take your learning to the next level by subscribing to more podcasts on compelling healthcare topics.